Rabbosai, today is Dav. It's Dav Kufov. Take your cue.
Okay. The Chol HaMekalkalim Pturim is where we're up to on the third line. So the Mishnah asserts that any time you do Kilko, or Mekalkal, which is called Mekalkalim Pturim, by Korea B'chamato, it asserts that all of the Melochas are Pater if you do Kilko. The problem is that Rabbi Abuhu was saying over in front of Rabbi Yochanan Mishnayos, the implications of Mishnayos. He said like this: Kol hamikalkalim pturim, chutz michovelu mavir. The Mishnah in Baba Kama over there talks about a case in which a person attacked someone on Shabbos and was chovel, or burned somebody's silo on Shabbos. So it's over there that since is mitchayeg benafsho on the Isser Shabbat, so therefore it's come like bit around him, and he doesn't pay in those circumstances. The problem is, it's a mekalkel. So when you're hurting this guy, you're basically causing kilko. When you're burning down his gadish, you're basically causing kilko. So apparently, there must be some special din that tells me that when it comes to chavalah, which was the Mishnah Baba Kama, or mavir, which was the Mishnah Baba Kama, and a mekalkel in those cases is chayav, because otherwise, how do we understand the Mishnah and Baba Kama? Omar Lei, said Rabbi Yochanan, told Rabbi Abu, Pok Toni Livra. You can walk out of here and say that over to the birds, because it sure ain't correct. And don't tell me phony limudim in my Beit HaMidrash. Chovel u'mavir eina Mishnah. There's no such thing. The mekalkel is potter by chovel u'mavir like any other mekalkel. Ve'im timtzel omar Mishnah. And if you find, in fact, a case where it seems to be clearly saying that a chovel would be chayev, or that a mavir would be chayev, it could only be in a case where it's mitakein. For instance, the chovel, sorry, the kalbo, he has a vampire dog, so he wants to feed his dog some blood. Or put it on some meat and make it fresh, you know. Or mavir, he needs the aether. He's making some kind of chemical mixture, which requires aether, which there's many of. Asks the Gemara, What was Rabbi Abu thinking? When it comes to Rabbi Yochanan, he says, "Kol hamekalkalim pturim chutz michovel u'mavir." And our Mishnah in Shabbos, because of the kayak of the Mishnah in Baba Kama, of the case of a chovel b'chaveru on Shabbos or mavir, the gedisha shel chaveru is contradicting the Ferisha Mishnah that doesn't make any distinction between any of the machos. It says over here, "Kol hamekalkalim pturim." How did he understand that? Answers the Gemara fascinating. He holds matnitin Rabbi Yehuda. What he holds is that the Mishnah is going according to Rabbi Yehuda. Now, on the Pashtas, the Gemara seems to be saying that there's a third machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon as to whether Mekalkal is potter or not, which would mean that we have three fundamental differences in the approach of Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda vis-a-vis Shabbat. We have, first of all, have the famous machlokat about whether a davar she'eno mitkaven is considered to be a malacha. According to Rabbi Shimon, it's actually mutter. According to Rabbi Yehuda, it's aser. We have the machloka of whether a malacha she'ena tzricha legufa is potter alera or chayav alera between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Shimon holds it's potter. And we have a third machloka in which, according to Rabbi Shimon, a mekalkel b'chabura, a mekalkel b'chlal is considered to be potter. According to Rabbi Yehuda, it's chayav. Apparently. Rashi says he's not familiar with such a machloket. So the Gemara seems to be referring to a machloket as if it's a known machloket. There ain't no such machloket. Therefore, says Rashi, this Gemara is pointing out an implication of the standing machloket of a malacha she'ena tzricha leguf. How does that work? Because recognize that malacha she'ena tzricha legufa is always a definition of the relationship of the act of the malacha to the tutsah of the malacha, correct? That's by definition what it means. So if you hold malacha she'ena tzricha legufa would be patur, so you're saying that even if I'm digging a hole, I'm certainly being chofer, but If I have no interest in the whole, and I'm interested in taking dirt for some purpose, the malacha is defined by that requirement, and therefore it's not a malacha of Shabbos, because there was no such malacha in the Mishnah. Even though there certainly is a malacha of digging, I wasn't digging the way it's defined in the Mishnah. According to Rabbi Yehuda, who cares why you're digging? The point is, you wanted to dig, you're doing the malacha of digging, so that the purpose of the malacha, the totsa'ot of the malacha, is not an inherent part of the malacha, according to him. Therefore, you would be chayev. Now, by implication, what that would mean is that we would have completely different standards of mitaken or mikalkel. Because according to Rabbi Shimon, who holds that the only time that you're chayev is where the malacha is required in and of itself, and not for something that comes out of it, it would be all very nice to say that the case over here is talking about you need blood, but that's a totsa of the chavalah. That's not the chavalah itself. So the point, therefore, would be that there would be a tremendous nafkamina between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon in how we could define mikalkel or mitakel. Because if you hold a malach shem shechel gufa is potter, the standards for defining mitakein are much more stringent. Because I have to define the mitakein in terms of the act per se, rather than in some good that might come out of the act. Because a good that comes out of the act is all very nice, you're right, it's a tikkun, and it's wonderful. Where does the Torah say it's also to be mitakein? The Torah said it's also to do malacha. This tikkun is not in the act of the malacha, the way it's defined, and therefore you're potter. So therefore, says Rashi, I think that it's a reference to that machlokas, the standing machlokas, and therefore, according to Rabbi Yehuda, when he reads the Mishnah in Bava Kamma, and he sees that the Mishnah says over there, if somebody is chovil in his friend on Shabbos, he doesn't have to pay. He's going to be chayev anyway, misa, even though, and maybe not literally misa, but the thing is that even if I may meet or shogegin your father, it doesn't mean you literally have to be killed. You did something which, under certain circumstances, with atra and so on and so forth, would theoretically be an act that's b'chayev mitah. It's called kom leibed rabbi. What would be the case, he says to himself? Isn't that a mekalkel? How does that? Oh, he says, very simple. The case is that you need blood. Shouts Rabbi Shimon to him, what does that have to do with it anyway? We need blood. But why did you need the act of the Kabbalah? The fact that the totsah is blood is like saying, I dug a hole because the totsah is afar. Thank you very much. You're right. It was a wonderful thing that you needed afar. What is it? Torah never said you're not allowed to get afar on Shabbat. Torah said you're not allowed to do a chafira where you need a hole. You have no interest in a hole. Therefore, how is that going to help you? It's still mekalkel in terms of the Kabbalah per se. It's still mekalkel. You're going to come along and you're going to say, but the case of the Havarav, what do you mean? I needed to cook a cup of coffee. So I burnt the wood to make it hot. Well, that's lovely. Where did the Torah say that you're not allowed to be mitakein for a cup of coffee? That wasn't the issue of the Havarav. So Mamela, again, you're talking about a mitakein, but it's mitakein for some other purpose. The technical term for that is mitakein etzel acherim. But you're not being mitakein etzel the malacha. Therefore, says Rabbi Shimon, I have a real problem. How am I going to explain this Mishnah? The Mishnah is taking for granted that you would be potter from the tashlumim in two cases, chavalah and havarah. Even though, as hard as I try to figure it out, I can't see how that could be a mitakein. Must be, therefore, says Rabbi Shimon, must be, that a mekalkel itself is also considered to be chayev. That's the point. I have no choice but to say that. In which case I could say, matniti, our Mishnah that says every single mekalkel is patur. That's true. If you hold the Rabbi Yehuda, that's true. Because he can always find a case that's mitakein, because it's easy for him to find a case of mitakein, because the ultimate malacha shein hatzricha legufa would be chayev. So even if it's mitakein etzel acherim, that's the equivalent thing of needing the dirt. So you need the dirt, so you're chayev on all. Whereas what Rabbi Abu was saying over, that was going aliba to Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon must hold that there is an exclusion to the rule of kol mekalkel impaturim. And we'll see very shortly where the source for such a thing would be. In fact, he finds the source in the Torah. But it's clear that the only way, according to him, to learn the Mishnah in Bava Kamma
would be to say that there must be an exclusion in the Torah which allows me to view a mekalkel b'chavalah or a mekalkel b'havara to be the malacha anyway. Is that clear? So in other words, the Gemara is taking for granted that because of the difference in the criteria, there would also be a nafkamina la'alacha between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Now, Lamaisa, we have a little bit of a problem in saying that our Mishnah is going like Rabbi Shimon. Because the Mishnah, remember, talked about the Korea Bechamato. So we had to deal with the problem of Tikkun, even where it's Korea Bechamato, the Gemara said, how come over here Korea Bechamato, which is Mitaken Li Yitzrei, is Potter? And how come over there in the Brayta it was Chayev? Remember yesterday's Gemara? And we said, Har Rabbi Yehuda, Har Rabbi Shimon. Which means that we've already decided that the Mishnah is going according to Rabbi Shimon. And that the Totsa'ah of feeling good by tearing something is all very nice, but it doesn't define the Malacha. It still remains in Malacha Shemtze for the Guf. So how can we now turn around and say, well, the Mishnah says, call him a Kaplan Keturim, he's going according to Rabbi Yehuda, if the only way it worked was according to Rabbi Shimon. That's a little bit crazy. Now Rashi asks that on himself. So why do that? Didn't we just get finished saying, if this is the Pshat, didn't we just get finished saying that the Mishnah is going according to Rabbi Shimon, which is why it says, a Koreva coming to the spot? I don't know, but I guess you got to say that the Reish is Rabbi Shimon and the Seif is Rabbi Yehuda. So the Reish that says the Korea B'chamato is Potter is going according to Rabbi Shimon. The general statement of Kolam and Kalkul and Baturin is going according to Rabbi Yehuda. Pretty strange. But this is how he's forced to learn. Okay, this is Rashi's Pshat. Tosfos has problems with this Pshat. This is an obvious problem. But another problem with this Pshat is Rabbi Yochanan threw Rabbi Avu out of Beit HaMidrash, essentially, for saying over, they call him out, go tell it to the birds, baby. Let me go tell it to the birds. He's telling you a Pshat according to Rabbi Shimon. You don't like Rabbi Shimon, so you say, tell it to the birds. This is a kasha that the Gemara asks elsewhere. It says, what? So because you hold like Rabbi Yehuda, therefore, call out Tani Rabbi Shimon, I'm Rimo, poke Tani Lebra? You can say, you should add, Hamani Rabbi Shimon. Mantana Rabbi Shimoni. But I pass it like Rabbi Yehuda, or whatever you want. You certainly don't say Poktan and Lavra. Poktan and Lavra is where somebody's making an egregious error. You're saying over something that's mistaken. Get out of here. Exactly what we were saying in this. Get out of here. It's exactly that point. I don't want you around here saying stuff like that. So how could the statement between Rabbi Avu and our Mishnah be the subject of a machlokas, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon? Anyway, that doesn't seem to work. Okay, let's first continue this again. I'll leave it to Rashi, and we'll see how late our day goes here. All right. So therefore, Matzitz Rabbi Yehuda, Brayta Rabbi Shimon. So now, where would Rabbi Shimon get? I mean, you can't say arbitrarily. So tell us what his makor is. Where does he get the idea that Havara and Havalah is different than anything else? This is a remarkable thing that it just happens to be the two examples in the Mishnah. You must admit it's a little bit amazing. If you're looking at it as a patch, you understand, if this is a band-aid, you're going to get awfully suspicious. It happens to be there's a Mishnah that talks about these particular cases you're talking about on Shabbos. And it happens to be that that's problematic to Rabbi Shimon. So you pick it out of a hat. Must be that those two cases that happen to work out as examples on Shabbat are where you won't have to pay. And go give me another example. Those are examples of payment. Happens to be that those two examples are unique for some weird reason. What's the marker for that weird reason? Says the Gemara. Obviously, we start with the marker. According to Rabbi Shimon, the point of the Mishnah is the expression of this special din. What is the marker for this special din? My time with Rabbi Shimon. Says Rabbi Shimon like this. Look, the Torah tells us an extra posik, Ubayom Hashmini, which the whole Bayom wasn't necessary over there. And that comes to be Matir Mila on Shabbos. Right? What do I need a head to be Matir Mila on Shabbos? What's the problem? It's a Chavalah. So what are you doing wrong? You're it's a Chavalah, basically, right? You're cutting skin, you're causing bleeding. So it's like any other Chavalah. But then you're Potter anyway. You'll be Potter anyway. Hachom will be Alma. So Mashra from here, if I need a special heter for Mila, the Torah is coming to tell me that Hachom will be Alma, another Chavalah, which would not be Mila, if I decide to cut off your ear, then I would be, in fact, Chayev. Why? I'm just being Chovel. So Mamela must be that there's something unique about Chavalah. And furthermore, there's another thing. The Torah ushered the Beit Din to act on Shabbat. That means that if somebody is chayav mita, and the appearance of the halacha is in terms of bat kohen. So if the Torah ushered havara, gabi bat kohen, where over there you have to heat the lead in order to be sorefer, so you're not allowed to light the ptilata ever on Shabbat. So apparently, I mean, even though I'm killing somebody, I'm just bringing the kalka. So apparently, shmamina, that a normal mavir under these circumstances would be chayav. So mavir biyam of chayav.
It says
chavala there too. Oh, Tosu says that, gosh, we'll talk about that. So this is rather striking, because then according to Rabbi Yehuda, should have to check now his whole approach. Because according to Rabbi Yehuda, there's no excuse for these psukim. Since according to Rabbi Yehuda, there's no problem, because anyway, I can easily view it as mitaken, because it's malacha chain tereh l'gufa. So he should think to himself, if I needed to do that, I must be wrong about the fact that I say malacha chain tereh l'gufa is chayav. Apparently, I relaxed my standards too much for malacha, because otherwise, why would the Torah have to tell me a halacha that a mekalko and these two things would be considered to be chayav anyway? This is a mekalko. What's the limit over here? What's it teaching me? Rabbi Yehuda says, Rabbi, I'll tell you very simple what it's teaching me. It's teaching me that such an act of tikkun, in fact, would be mitakein. That's it. Needs to tell me that I'm allowed to do it even though I'm being over real chil Shabbat. Because what are you saying? You're saying mila is chovel b'yalma. Understand? If you now shave off a piece that's sticking out of a bowl, was improperly formed, you cut off the piece on Shabbos, you're mitakein a kli. You're telling me you wouldn't be chayav for tikkun in the kli because you're destroying the piece? Or you're telling me, look at the kli. What's the object of the malacha? The object is the piece that I cut off of the kli, or the object of the malacha is the kli? The way to be mitakein the kli is by cutting off this piece. That's exactly how to look at mila. You have an improperly formed human being who now requires proper formation. The fact that I'm taking off something doesn't mean that the object is not the human body. The object is the human body. Therefore, Kriyam Ravashi, Mali da taken mila, Mali la taken kli. Explain to me what the difference is. I have an improperly formed organ that I'm making look nice. I have a kli that's improperly formed that I'm making look nice. The object is not the piece that I'm cutting off. Of course, the piece that I'm cutting off is chavala bialma, obviously. But why should I look at that as the malacha? You simply improperly define the object of the malacha, in which case it has nothing to do with the issue of mitakein on mekalkel. It's by definition a mitakein. And if that's the case, do I not need a pasuk to tell me it's mutter to be mitakein on Shabbat? What does this have to do with Malacha and Tzrich al-Gufa? And when it comes to the case of Havara, you're telling me that the Beit Din is not allowed to go ahead and to be mavir for the Bat Kohen. In other words, you're telling me that a mavir is awesome. That's what you're telling me. Well, of course a mavir is awesome. Because mali l'taken, mali l'bashel petila, mali l'bashel samanin. Would you have the same ideas? Again, you were focusing on this entirely wrong. You're now going ahead now and cooking the samanim for the Mishkan. That was the fundamental case where I need my dye stuff. Mishkan was full of all of these dyeing malachas, right? So now I'm going ahead and I'm going to cook the dye stuff. And if I'm going to cook the ptilah, what's the difference between cooking the ptilah and cooking the dye stuffs in the Mishkan? Therefore, obviously, the only reason that the Torah is telling me over here is to tell me that afal pikein Bezdin, even though I was told to be mekayim this mitzvah, the Torah is ushering it on Shabbos, in which case I have no problems being, well, like this, I would think I should be derech Shabbos, because after all, this is a chiyuv on Bezdin, and so on and so forth, that I shouldn't. That's all. But it's not, it certainly has nothing to do with the mekalkel. There's no mekalkel over here at all. Tosis points out that we should not think that the meaning over here is a little bit Levashel Ptila is a little bit misleading. Because Levashel Ptila, the implications of the Gemara are that what we're saying is that if you're cooking metal, you're basically being mitakein the metal in terms of its tempering and so on and so forth, in the same way that you would be mitakein legabi cooking up dye stuff. But that doesn't make sense to Stasis, because if that's the point, what do you do about the other mitot beitin? In other words, it can't be that the focus is over here particularly on the question of the dye stuffs, or if you had it from before. So you had it cooked up from before. So then you're going to say, okay, so then it would be okay. Because my only problem is the actual tikkun of the ptila. That doesn't make sense. If it's only because of the tikkun ptila, so then fine, so do the tikkun ptila before.
Where is the Torah you that you
want to have a batkain on Shabbat? We dash it from Moshvotechem. There's a whole complex drasha that the Gemara makes. It has to be referring that this is not on Shabbat.
And right? Other mitzvot beitin, they carry out on Shabbat?
No, also not, which is what Tosis points out. What would one have to do with the other? So in other words, so he says the meaning over here is mali bishul ptila. In other words, the Torah has already expanded the concept of the b'malacha for inclusion in the ultimate tikkadav, and not the bishul itself. But I'm being mavashul samamanim. I don't need the samamanim. You're telling me what? I'm mitaken the samamanim? The chiyuv is because the samamanim are required for the tzviat ha-beged, not because it's the equivalent of cooking up a porridge. In other words, these samamanim will be usable for tzviat. And because of that, and since I need tzviat, that's considered to be a tikkun. So you're telling me the same thing over here. Since I need the ptila, why do I need the ptila? In order to be kind of the mitzvah of sreifa. Therefore, it's considered to be a tikkun, not because there's a tikkun in the metal per se, any more than there's a tikkun in the tzviyah per se. Okay, so if that's the case, what it's telling you is that the requirement to do something for the tzarech of a mitzvah is considered to be a tikkun, which is really the reason why we said before that a korei alamet is a tikkun. Why is it a tikkun? Well, because it happens to be that it's important for you to be korei, and that's for a different purpose. So that chiddush, Tainus Reb Yehuda, is the point of the limud. And it works in beautifully, the way I understand the concept of a malacha. Because over here, I certainly would have thought, it needs to be a tikkun in terms of at least the object of the malacha. Over here, it's basically irrelevant. It's all circumstantial. It happens to be there's a mitzvah that I need to be mekayim. I need to be mekayim. So it turns out it was mekayim the mitzvah by being korei alamet. Well, certainly you're not going to say that the act of kriya on some levels, but etzematikon. So you see from here that the tzerech of a mitzvah defines an actual way of defining the circumstance, even though you'll say, it's not measurable. There's nothing that I do with it. It was simply a question of purpose. That purpose is sufficient to be defined as tikkun. So if that's the case, any elements that are involved in Chilul Shabbat, including the Netilat Neshama, per se, would it be Aser because they're Tzorach the Kiyam of the Mitzvah? In which case, all of the Mitot Beitin would be Asur. It's just an example that we're bringing. If it were actually a Din in Bishul, what would it have to do with Chonek? What would it have to do with Sayef? Absolutely nothing. Over there you aren't talking about two steps. So we're talking, therefore, about a completely different concept, says Tyson. We're talking about the idea of how it is that a tzorech of something that's basically irrelevant, totally, to my needs or to the purpose of what I'm doing, but because that mitzvah exists, that itself becomes a getter of tikkun. That's what we see from this Sreifat Kohen. Okay, so according to me, therefore, it's all very consistent. Torah's being very consistent. It's all assuming the nature of malacha requires that tikkun. It has no problem with that tikkun being exterior to the actual act of the malacha. It never does. It would be the same thing as saying, chofer v'tzarek la'afar. Whereas Rabbi Shimon is startled by this. Because he says, look, it's all very nice to talk about there are totsa'ot of tikkun, agreed. But those totsa'ot of tikkun are secondary to the act of the malacha. They're just poel yotzei for the malacha. Should be no different than digging a hole and kneading the dirt. And yet, I'm convinced that that is not the definition of the malacha. How do I explain these psukim? Unless, in fact, the Torah is saying it doesn't need to have a purpose. In other words, Kabbalah is defined as the act of Kabbalah. Mavir is defined as the act of Havara. And why would that be true? Would we say to ourselves, that's crazy. I mean, just because it happens to be, these are the two cases. So it happens to be that these are unique cases in Rebbe. Isn't it more reasonable for Rebbe Shimon to get up and take it like a man and say, look, I made a mistake? Obviously, Rebbe Yehuda is right. Why would these cases be different? I must have made some fundamental error. Of course not. It's obvious why he doesn't do that. Because those milachot, which are be'etzem hashchatot, that's what they are. They're acts that are destructive acts in their essence. Clearly the Torah over there has got to be saying, if it wants to include them in malacha, which generally speaking you say, but a malacha is a metakein. So what it's saying is that there are certain acts in which the destruction is total, such as netilat neshama or havara, that defines the creative act. Because such creative acts are very much a part of the entire development of how things end up being metukan in the end. Is it so unlikely that therefore the Torah would view fire as a tikkun? You're going to say, what kind of tikkun? I mean, look at this, you're burning. What are you talking about, man? Most human progress is made out of fire. Evolution proceeds by murder. So what are you going to say? You're going to say, therefore, it's a tikkun. It can't be a malacha. That's the definition of progress. You're going to be like these guys who are against nuclear weapons.
Producing energy is a malacha.
It's tikkun. I lamais it's mekalko. Right? In terms of the act that I'm doing to an object, it's mekalko. Okay? That the Torah is expanding now. That then, in other words, I have two ways of looking at it. I can either say I was wrong because the ultimate tozah of a thing must be in general part of the malach, and therefore I should agree with Rabbi Yehuda, and then I would have no problem. I mean, of course, Mila would be aser because, look, the result is you've got a prettier person. Of course, Ptila is aser because the result is you're being Mekayim Mitzvah. I could say that. But then I also have to think to myself, was it indeed coincidental that Dafka, the two malachot that are in the definition of the Rasiya, always destructive to an object? Dafka, those two malachot, where the Torah has to speak out this halacha? I find that very unlikely. On the contrary, I think that's the whole point, that there are, in general, two sets of malachot. Malachot that are minei ubei, Tikkunim, and the definition of malacha includes the creativity of the act in the object. And then there are two malachot which are central to the whole idea of progress and development, which are be'etzem hashchatot locally, and the Torah is barbadan. That makes more sense to me than to say, let's change the definition of all malachot and include all implications. So that would be your two very, very different ways of looking at the specific phenomena of Kabbalah and of Sreifa, of Havar.
Quick question?
Yeah.
So when it says that you can do Mila, that's to exclude that in other places you can't cause a Havala.
Right.
But then it says that the parallel case should be that you
right.
could kill the
no,
person.
Yeah, but there's different ways that the Torah teaches us things. It doesn't have to necessarily say it in the same way. You could kill another, but clearly
so
by
you
saying
can't
you can't, it's obviously saying. So there's some issue that's involved here.
Okay.
Right? So okay, so now we understand what's happening. Continues the Mishnah. The Shiur, it goes through now all of the various the Malabein, the Minapeh, it's all of the various Shiurim of all the various acts that are pre-Ariga acts. The Shiur is either on the original acts is Rokha Vasita Kaful, and Ha'oreg, which is a much bigger tikkun. And if shear is kamale hasif, which we saw before, would be the minimum width, unless the thing that you're doing is fully built, like the ribbon, where you have a fee of just two rows. How is that? Reb Yosef machvi kafu. Reb Yosef indeed took his forefinger and his index finger, spread them apart, and he said double. Whereas Rav Chiya bar Ami machvi pashut, because what he did is he took his finger and separated from his thumb, which is exactly twice that distance. We say exactly, obviously, we mean in a system of measurements that uses feet and seats.
Okay. So now this was a question of illustration. In being machve pashut,
you're teaching me something, which is confusing people as to what a sit is. I mean, I know what a sit kaful is. What's a sit? If you show me this, I understand. This is a sit. Two of these are sit kaful. So there's advantages to kind of the kind. Rabbi Yehuda Rimer, atzat zipor lemigdal. If you get a bird into your dresser, you slam the door, the drawer on the bird, that bird is caught, and you would be chay. Atzat svi labayit chayat. And if you would get now a deer and slam the door on him in your house, get into your house, close the door. So now, that's considered to be tzedah. But less than that, meaning, you've captured a thing by putting it in your yard. Slam the door on, now it's in your yard. It can run around all around the yard. You wouldn't be chayav on that, because it's not caught yet. I mean, it may be a step closer to caught, but you've still got a lot of running to do, honey. So, that's not called tzedah. V'chachamim, amen? See, for l'migdal, yes, I agree with you. When it comes to a bird, you'd have to get that bird into your dresser. To get that bird into the house is not considered to be seidah. Now, it's not clear at this point what the point is. In other words, is seidah the idea that this animal basically is now stuck? It's stuck, it can't get away from you ultimately. It could keep trying to get away. But you've now confined it in such a way that ultimately it's yours. That's one possibility, but then it really shouldn't matter whether it's in the yard or whether it's in the house or so on. Is the idea that it should be in a position, I mean, if that's the case, then it has to be just, if that would be the case, then it would just be that it can't escape. Okay, if Rabbi Yehuda says it's not, it can't be sawed in a house, it's not enough to say it just can't escape. I can understand, I would be able to say, let's say the Rabbana, yes, but Svi, Bayit, Gina, Chatzer, Bivarian, I don't care where you get that Svi. You can get into your house in which it's really stuck and confined there in your room, but it could also be in your yard, or it could be in a vivarium. Vivarium is like an enclosure for live animals, obviously, in Latin. So that would be fine. Yeah, vivarium, aquarium. Aquarium would be water life in a container. Vivarium would be a live things in an enclosure. Okay? The same word, basically. So that would also be the same. So what exactly are they saying? What are they arguing about? So I was, we could look at it that maybe Rabbi Yehuda, the reason Rabbi Yehuda and Chachamim agree about the tzvi in the migdal is because if you put the tzvi in the house, you still... the bird in the McDonald's, because if you have a bird in the house, it's still not really catchable. But, I mean, if that's the case, then if they both agree it has to be mamish catchable, and right there to get it, so what about, why not in the house? Why is the house enough for the tree but not the yard? Why don't you agree about the yard, too? The Chacham should also say, if I need the bird in a McDonald, then I need the tree in a small enclosure. Which is the equivalent of the migdal for the bird. There must be some other issue over here. So you could say, okay, a bird in a house, the issue is not because it's going to require work to catch, because if that's the issue, then I should say the same thing about its feet in the yard. Maybe the point is because the bird can escape. It'll find an open window somewhere, find a crack somewhere, maybe that's the issue. In which case, the tzvi's not going to get out. But then, I mean, if that would be the case, then if I had a covered yard, then I could actually be chayav for getting a bird into a covered yard. If I covered vivarium, and I get the bird in there, I mean, it may be just as hard for me to catch it there as it is in an open field, but it's caught, because it's surrounded by my walls, essentially. Would they be willing to go that far? Yeah, you could see that we're raising issues over here. Is it the fact that the animal is cowed?
Yes.
Cowed. Excuse the pun, but... it's for all intents and purposes. It's just another cow over here, right? I understand that my own cow, I'm not Kai Seda on, for take, it's mine already. I have that type of connection to it in which it's nitzot v'omid. Even if it's outdoors and it's trying to run away, I'm not chayav on seda if I get my cow back. If I got my dog who's trying to run away, it's not seda for my catching my dog. Oh, no, absolutely not. But that's called nitzod v'omed. So that means that there is an element of a psychological aspect to seda. Something that is not in my rishos. Once it's put into my rishos, so it's mine. Maybe that's the idea. But then again, I mean, so why dafka and migdal for the tzipor?
Somebody else's cow, if you...
No, it's only a cow to him.
Doesn't that have to do with...
Well, I mean, there's another issue, as we'll see later on, which is this the type of animal that would escape? If it doesn't escape, if it doesn't object to being taken, then it's not Shaykh Seda. And it's very interesting. Shlomo Zalman brings a raya that the tzav cannot be a turtle. Because the Gemara talks about the chiyuv of Seda on the tzav, as we'll see. And the turtle doesn't really make much of an effort to get away.
What would be the point?
So how can it tzav be a turtle?
It's a slow getaway.
I understand, but there's nothing it can do. For all that's the purpose. It's called nitzod va'omed.
Okay,
is
confining
a pet to a particular
place? No.
Not at all?
No.
In any context?
No.
What about the difference between two dimensions and three dimensions?
You mean if you've got a two-dimensional cow?
No.
Not very filling.
It's a bird. It has three dimensions to escape it. Well, I mean, like, a tree, just in that enclosure.
But yeah, but again, the issue is, so what does that mean? That it's harder? Harder to catch? Is that it? Is the functionality about how difficult it is?
Yeah, not just harder.
Yeah, okay. So again, that's what we have to consider. I'm just raising the issues. Those are the things we'd have to consider. At this point, it may well be, as Rashi says in his Pirush of the Mishnah, and this is common for Rashi to do, as the Rashash asks, why did Rashi say that it can escape through the windows? That's what Rashi explains the reason at Sat Sipor. If it wouldn't be an amygdala, it could escape through the window if you put it into the house. It's clear in the Gemara, in the end, that's not the issue. But the reason that Rashi puts it in is because of what Rashi always does in the Mishnah. He leaves open the possibilities in the Mishnah to include the various elements that the Gemara may take into consideration, and then allows the Gemara to basically isolate the issues that are important to us. So it will turn out in the end, it doesn't matter if there's open windows or not. But perhaps that's part of the question, because maybe once it would be fully enclosed, you would be having a bird as well. Sorry? What? That I just said?
Yes.
Rashi often says in the Mishnah an approach which only is to aim the Habamin in the Gemara. And the reason he does that, because as in the Farish, that's what you need to do to leave the Mishnah open for the Gemara's understanding. I certainly don't want you to think, when I give you a Pirushim, which is why it's very misleading to read Rashi's Pirushim on the Mishnah, I don't want you to think this is the Pirushim on the Mishnah. It's a possible Pirushim on the Mishnah, which therefore we have to see whether it holds after you ask from other Mishnayas, or you ask from what appear to be contradictions from within the Mishnah.
As opposed to the Pirushim of the Rambam, which is there to explain the Mishnah having taken the Oath.
Correct. The Pirushim of the Rambam is not of a Mishnah in the context of the Gemara. Specifically not. The whole point of his Pirushim Mishnah. In fact, there's no one else who is in the Farish Mishnah is that way as Rashi does. Mm-hmm. As part of it, here's what the Gemara would have said. So that, as a matter of fact, you'll find very often Pirushim of the Rishonim that contradict the Gemara. Because they're not interested in the Gemara's approach to the Mishnah. You want to read the Mishnah. This is a nice way to understand the Mishnah. The fact is the Gemara is docha this and makes it very complex because of a kasher that wants it to come out, the Fiyaman Diyama that we already classed and whatever. You know, so why is it over here, stomach Rabbi Shimon over there? I don't need to explain that to you in the context of a Mishnah. That's a Gemara asking a Mishnah on a Mishnah. But the Mishnah is meant to include the possibilities that I'm telling you through. So I'll tell you what the Mishnah means, Kipshut. You find that very often. This drives people crazy. What? Why is it being refreshed? The Mishnah connected to Gemara. It's the same thing that the Eben Ezra will do on a Pasuk. They'll totally ignore the Gemara on the Pasuk. Right, and he'll be mafarish the pasuk in ways that is completely antithetical to the Gemara, and he'll tell you why the Gemara is pshat is an oldest. But of course, the pasuk is meant to stand kipshuta. I'm going to tell you what it means. You want to go look in the Gemara and figure out how it is that we're forced into, you know, what can you do? You have to be meniach lekrov, uk meaduchke, and so on. It's too bad, you know, because this is how we know we need to see it in terms of the lamais of Tershabal pasuk application. That doesn't mean that's the meaning of the pasuk. Just, you often have this type of thing. It's really not even a kasha when it bothers the Rosh Hashanah. It's not the issue. Of course the Gemara had to take that into consideration. We'll see that Rashi adds a great deal in saying that. If we wouldn't have recognized that we're including the possibility of the birds escape through the window of the house, the Gemara makes no sense, as we'll see in a moment. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel omer, lo kol ha-bivarim shavim. Look, not every vivarium is the same. I mean, you're saying a vivarium. You've got cheapo vivariums that you buy at the Walmart, and then you've got vivariums, you know, that are like really serious vivariums. I mean, it depends how the thing is constructed. I mean, so Zaklal, look, let me just tell it to you as it is. It's very simple. Instead of analyzing sizes, money, or whatever, the bottom line is, our issue is this a thing that is not really nitzod? I still have to work on catching it. You have to work on catching it. It's not caught. And therefore, what you did so far is not the malach of tzedek. You don't have to work on catching it. Chain of mechusar tzedek, chayav. Now, of course, we'll need to explain that. And we'll need to see whether Reb Shimon ben Gamliel is arguing on the Tanna Kamma, or is he explaining the Tanna Kamma? Because it really depends. We don't really understand the Tanna Kamma yet. We don't understand how, on the one hand, the bird has to be in a little cage, whereas a tzvi can be in a vivarium that may be just as much larger than the tzvi, than the cage is than the bird. And for the bird it's okay, but for the tzvi, I mean, it's very common. So it's possible that they're not arguing, but maybe this represents another shita that holds that the only issue is whether it's nitzot. Maybe there's other elements. So let's see. It's not hot. If you take a look in the Gemara in Beitzah, the Mishnah over there says, "Ein sadim dagim minat bivarium biyomta." If you have an aquarium, you're not allowed to take fish out of that aquarium, and you're not allowed to feed your fish on Yom Tov. Now, it's not quite clear why you are not allowed to feed fish. There's a lot of different approaches. Rashi says that in... Because, or Shabbos. I mean, you're saying why Yom Tov also?
Yeah.
Because so Rashi says the klal is that anything that is mukta, you can't be toreach for. The other Rishonim have a very difficult time with this, because animals that you keep are mukta, and you certainly can be toreach for. You're supposed to feed them. Some suggest maybe the idea is that fish seem to manage just fine. If you don't, they're always finding these little protozoa or whatever. I mean, you don't see what they're eating, but believe me, they ain't starving in there. So therefore, it's not considered to be mizonoteim alecha, because they manage. Just tells us, I mean, you know, how do you know that? I mean, how do you know that that's true about fish, but not true about animals that could wander around and maybe find something to eat in the ground or whatever? I mean, you know, it's just Ashur B'Alma.
All they'd have to do is ask.
I find it very difficult.
Anybody who's had fish for a pet, the problem is always feeding them too much.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean that you don't have to feed them on some level.
No, I'm saying so
on that level. Okay. Lamaisa Tosus learns that it's a function of tzedah. Anything which is nitzod, which is really nitzod v'omid, so that it's already yours as if you're holding it, fine, and there's not a problem. Something which is not yet nitzod, we're worried that it can't be considered to be mizonoteim alecha, and therefore you're, because it's not yours yet. You've never succeeded in capturing this thing yet. And if it isn't nitzot, how could it be mizonoteim alecha? Therefore, you're just basically being toreach on something that's none of your business to be toreach on. So until you've established that connection, you can't now go ahead and feed it. Now, but what's interesting is that, let's say you would have birds. You keep birds. Many people kept, you know, columbarium, I think they're called. They keep columbarium. To keep doves and, you know, pigeons and so on. But these birds could fly away at any time if they wanted to. You know, but it's the old babe on the farm story, you know. They don't suspect what you really got in mind, you know. This nice, kind human. They don't fly away. They let you calmly come pick them up and eat them. You know? So that's nitzan already. If they're there, then they're already nitzodim. Obviously, I mean, that means that certainly you have a very strong psychological component, so to speak, in the element of nitzod. This bird is not attempting to escape me. It's not attempting to escape me. It's as if it's mine, because it lives in my yard, even though the yard isn't covered, and so on. So again, we see clearly that there's more to Seda than just the question of whether it's physically constrained. That bird is not physically constrained.
And part of having that bird is the fact that it knows it counts on food?
Yeah, it could be. I mean, over there it's considered to be. Okay. The Shaila is like this, says the Gemara. There it says that you can be tzad, avot tzadim chaya ba'ov, from a barbarian, and you can be notim lifnehem mizonot. So what does that mean? That means that if it's in a vivarium, it's considered already to be nitzot. Braminu. Bivarium shel chayot, shel ofot, shel dagim. Ein tzadim behem b'yom tov, ve'ein notim lifnehem mizonot. So we have a real contradiction, at least in two elements. In the chayav oath, it says, and in the first case it says tzadim, and in the second case it says ein tzadim. Okay, dagim is not a contradiction, but chayot are a contradiction, ofot are a contradiction. So kasha chaya chaya, kasha ofot ofot. Now chaya chaya, I don't have a problem, because I could say lo kasha haravir of a rabbanan. I know that there exists a machloket. We just read it. According to the Rabbanan, once you get a tzvi into a vivarium, you're chayav. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, only if you get the tzvi into the bayit are you chayav. Okay, so by the same token, if the tzvi is in a vivarium, then according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's not nitzot, therefore ain't tzadim. According to the Rabbanan, it was already nitzot before, and therefore there's no problem in taking it. I don't have a problem with that. I already saw the mission. Not that I necessarily understand it yet, but at least I know that there are such two shitot. But ofot, now that is a problem, because Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanan both agreed in the Mishnah that the definition of tzeda for ofot is not to get them into a vivarium, it's to get them into a migdal, which is your dresser. It's a lot smaller than a vivarium. So how do you explain that? Kasha. V'chi tem ofot amilo kasha. Maybe you'll say that actually is not a problem, because the case in which Rabban and Rabbi Yehuda agree that the oath needs to be inside of your dresser, and it would not be sufficient to get the oath even into your house, and or certainly not a vivarium, maybe it's talking about, over here where it says it's nitzad, it's talking about a biver mikura. It's talking about where the vivarium is covered on top with a net. So therefore, even a bird would be caught in such a vivarium. Now we understand why Rashi had to say the thing about the windows, because otherwise we should have said to ourselves, okay, wait a second, a house has a roof. How could the Gemara think, if it wasn't enough to get the bird into the house, how could the Gemara think that a covered vivarium is better than a house? What was the Gemara's having then? Therefore, Rashi's mepharish in the Mishnah, a house has windows. The point of a vivarium is that it's made not to escape from. A house isn't made not to escape from. So getting a bird into a house doesn't mean anything. But getting a bird into a covered vivarium would mean everything. So clearly there had to be that possibility in the Mishnah, or we never would have entertained this nonsense. So obviously Rashi had to explain that in the Mishnah. And if he hadn't, you'd be sitting here scratching your head at this point. Say, what? And how could you read that into the Mishnah? And this is the fairish contrasting the migdal with the bayit. And you're telling me beaver. What good is a beaver? The most you could turn a beaver into is a house. That's the best possible beaver. And I thought we came, we weren't ready to assist. So it must be that the issue is how easy it is to catch the bird within the house. So Koshikain, it's more difficult to catch a bird even in a covered beaver than in a house. Comes along Rashi to say, maybe the Gemara held at this point that the difficulty in catching it is not the issue, but rather it's the possibility of escape that's the issue. So Mamela, a house that's not meant for trapping, there's always little places to escape from. Maybe you didn't even notice the bird got out through the chimney. How did you think about that? Didn't think about that. Okay, so therefore, it's not considered to be nitzot. But when you make a vivarium, you're careful not to allow places for the bird to go out. So you would be chayav.
purposes specifically to not have a place.
Exactly. So that would make perfectly good sense. It's wonderful that we had Rashi to be mefarish that for us in the mission. Okay, so now maybe that's the pshat. Habe viver mikora, v'habe viver she'en eno mikora. So ask the Gemara, now let me ask you something. If the point is bichlal, mikora or not, why couldn't we have explained the bayit in the same way? You told me a bayit, as if a bayit by definition can't be caught. Why is a bayit by definition can't be caught? Why can't we say that bayit, which is mikora, and bein l'Rav Yehuda, bein l'Rabbanan, tzipor only can be in a migdal, but in a bayit, it can't be. So doesn't that mean that the issue that we have to take into consideration is how small the area is, rather than how it's particularly constructed? Because you could have told me the difference between a house that has the windows closed, a house that has the windows open. Talk to me about a small enclosure. That's how you want to tell me this halacha. Doesn't that prove to you that it's a function of the size of the enclosure and the ease that I have to grab the thing that it needs of? It's got to be. So what good is it talking about a beaver makora, a beaver shena makora? You're taking for granted that I could talk about beaver that way, talk about bias in that way. I'll tell you, must be that there's another issue. Omar Rabba Barav Huna, it depends on the bird. That's the issue. There are some birds which will accept the fact that once they are in a house, once they're in any type of enclosed area, that they basically are at that moment tamed. They don't fight you. So if you have a pigeon that finds itself in a bayit, it's tamed. But there are tzipor dror, a tzipor dror by definition, the word dror. And we use dror in exactly the same way. Dror is liberty. The American Liberty Bell. It's called liberty because it has on the pasuk cross and dror. So the Gemara says a very fascinating thing about the nature of dror. What is the word dror? The word dror means that it can live wherever it wants. Dar, dar. Wants to live here, to live there. Wants to live here, to live there. Which is the fundamental part of the idea of American freedom, which is almost the most fundamental part. You go wherever you want, and you settle wherever you want. When you're communism, you needed a special heter yitzhiyah to go from Moscow to go visit your mother who's living in a suburb. So the idea, therefore, of a tzipor dror is that it is psychologically unmoved by the fact that it has a cover over its head, or that you've succeeded in trapping it in an area. It will continue to fight to the bitter end, and wherever you try to get it, it'll fly somewhere else. Because it is not going to accept marut. That's the point.
Free as a bird.
Free as a bird, exactly.
So the dresser drawer is
a dresser drawer allows you to grab it. That's the point. So, halka b'tzipor drawer askina, l'fi she'ena mekabelet marut. There is a concept in Seda which is called marut. Oftentimes, you actually see this in animals. When they are caught, they stop struggling. Why do they stop struggling? Why don't you keep fighting? You don't keep fighting because there's an acceptance of the fact that something stronger than me is being shalit on me. And simply stop fighting it. Once you do that, and that's a very important part of horse training as well, is to get it to accept marut. Once it'll accept marut,
Breaking the horse.
Exactly. So normally part of tzeda is breaking, what we called before cowing was a pun. But you put the animal into a position in which it's accepted the fact that it's not worth fighting. A tzipor dror does not accept that, ever, until you actually have it. So therefore, if you're talking about a tzipor dror, so you know, finani, our Mishnah that says a tzipor drawer is only caught when it's in the drawer, he's talking about that type of thing. That's not makaba marut. Mashenken, where you're talking about a vivarium that's considered to be a trap for a tzipor, it's only a trap, a psychological trap. It's not a trap in the sense that it's trapped because you've got it. You've got it because psychologically you've got it. So it now is the equivalent of a pigeon in your personal dovecot in the back of the house. The Tana de Rabbi Yishmael, Lama Nikra Shema Tzipor Dror. The reason that it's called a Tzipor Dror is because of the way that it lives. is mipnei shadara kebayit kibisadeh. It makes no difference to this bird if it's outdoors and feels that it's got the whole wide world in front of it, or if it's in a house. So you say, what do you mean? What is it, stupid? No, there's always options. I can live in that corner or I can live in that corner. So my options may be extremely reduced. There's still options. And still I'm in the guy's hand, there's still options. So for such a bird, in a chinami, unless you're in a migdal, you're not trapped. Says the Gemara, you know, the truth is, now that you've pointed out that when it comes to the tzipor, we don't have to make it dependent on the machlokas or the yudim or rabban, right? The first answer about explaining the difference between chaya and chaya, we said must be dependent on the machlokas, reviewed in the rabbanah. This doesn't have to be dependent on that machlokas either, because we could say that chaya chaya nani lo kasha. If we're willing to change what bird we're talking about, why can't we be willing to change what beaver we're talking about? And we could say that ha beviver gadol, ha beviver katan. Maybe even the Rabbanan agreed to Reb Shimon ben Gamliel's statement. We saw at the end of the Mishnah, Reb Shimon ben Gamliel said, Lo kol habivarin shavin. Maybe he's not arguing with that statement. Maybe he's just explaining with that statement. Maybe the Chachamim also agreed that there's no defined object named vivarian that's going to define Seda. It depends on the reality. If it's too large, then it still requires tzeda. If it's small enough, it's not mechusar tzeda, and therefore the tzeda has been achieved. And therefore, that may be the explanation. They're too bright, though. They don't contradict each other in any way. They're talking about different kind of birds. They're talking about different kind of vivarium. Very simple. So, what defines hechidami viver gadol, hechidami viver katan? How would such a thing be defined? Amar Ravashi, kol hecha deroit batre. If all you need to do is crouch one and do a running jump at this thing one time and you can catch it, then it's caught. That's a beaver katan. In other words, no matter where it is, you're close enough to give one run and grab it. Then that's a beaver katan. Idach, anything else is a beaver gadol and is not considered to be nitzav. Even according to the Rabbanan who claimed that you would be chayev in a vivarium. Inami, or there may be another explanation. There may be an explanation that indeed the difference between Biver Gadol and Biver Katan is indeed psychological. It may be a function of Marut. At what point does an animal feel trapped? And at that point that it feels trapped, it will no longer struggle. In which case we can define it as Kol Hechel D'Nofel Tula Diktolim Ahadodi is Biver Katan. Where the shadow of the walls fall on each other so that it doesn't feel it ever gets a chance to get away. It's not in the wide open. That's called a beaver katan. The idach beaver gadol. Now, Tosfos learns that this is not an alternative. In other words, Tosfos is taking for granted. It's not that Gemara is going to give now another definition of the concept of trapping. Once we're willing to say it depends on the size of the beaver, it's a function of catching, not psychological entrapment. And therefore, he says there must have been a standard height to walls that we're using here as a definition. I mean, otherwise this doesn't mean anything. But if we can talk about a whole different approach, which is psychological entrapment, which Gemara just raised in terms of Kabbalat Marut, then it may well be that means exactly what it's saying. If the animal never feels that it's out of range of these walls, then basically it gives up and it's Mekabel Marut. Inami, there may be another explanation. Kolecha deleka upti, biver katan. And again, this can also be approached in two ways. Upti means if there's no corners, there's no place to hide. If there's no place to hide, it's a biver katan. So you could say, okay, that's because it's got nowhere to run to, or you could say it's because it recognizes it has nowhere to run to. I mean, both pshatim still would apply. The idach, if it's got a place in which it can make a little place for itself in a corner and so on, then it may still feel free enough to be the equivalent of a tzipor drawer. And it's a beaver gadol, and it was not mekabel marut. Again, you could learn it that way. You could learn because it's more difficult to run and catch it if it has a place to stick itself in.
Turtles do.
Yeah, all animals do. Turtles are in Bonnet's neighborhood. Do you have my turtles?
No, Van Geldman's have our turtles.
So to whom did I give my turtles? Oh, to Steve. What happened to all those turtles?
I didn't know we had.
Yeah, we had
it. There are turtles in the roof?
Yeah, they just appear on your roof.
I'm saying this is someone's down in this point.
Oh, that's what you mean, that it could be, I see, I'm sorry, I didn't realize the implications of what you were saying. Let's see if it fits into the signal, that's great. Okay, Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. Now, note, in order, before we begin the next sugya, note that we just were willing to say that the Tanakhama agreed to Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. Because we wanted to make a nafkamina between a beaver katan and a beaver gadol. But that's what Rav Shimon ben Gamliel was doing. So apparently we have no problem saying Rav Shimon ben Gamliel agrees, that the Tanakhama agrees with Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, right? Says the Gemara, Amr Rav Yosef, Amr Rav Yehuda, Amr Shmuel, halachic Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. Now, if you say halachic Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, you're assuming that the Tanakhama argues on Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. What's this halacha jazz? Halacha mechlal de plig? What are you saying? That they're arguing? I mean, we were just willing to accept that there's not even a machlokas here. You're already running around poskening halacha on my way. So what do you care? Why not kalachamina? So if they don't argue, so for sure halacha is like Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. See? So I mean, you can't go wrong. You say halacha Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. Either they don't even argue, in which case 100% halacha is like Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. I'm telling you that they do argue halacha is like Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. And you're complaining? Says Abaye, you're darn right I'm complaining. What are you talking about? Gemara Gomer's Muruta Tehe? Are we interested here in singing songs, or are we interested in understanding? It's all very nice to say, well, you don't like my lines. It's beautiful lines. You can't complain about it. I love to care with Shin and Ben Gamliel. Woo! Go ahead, tell me that's wrong. You know, if you were doing a vaudeville act, it would be fine, but that's not the business that we're in over here. You're supposed to be telling me something that's rational. If you use the word halacha kid, then you're telling me there's a problem in determining what halacha's like. Anybody who's listening to you understands that means I can't be mefarish the Mishnah in a way that would allow the Tanakhama to hold back of Shem Yamliel. And all you're doing is just, well, I didn't mean anything, I was just carrying on my vaudeville act. I don't understand what you mean, my nafka lachamina. It's totally wild shot. I can't get over it. At least he says if I wouldn't be embarrassed, I would say this. But it's another one of the reasons why a lot of people don't like to use the Tiferet Yisrael. This is like one of his most famous wild shotting, in which he says, and the Pshat Gemara Gomer's Muruta Tihe clearly implies, he says this in his Birsha Mishnayos, obviously, that actually, every Mishnah had a song, right? And this was a way in which you could memorize a Mishnah. Because when you knew the song, it's a great way to remember. It's like everybody remembers the words of all Broadway, you know, musicals. Because it's a song, exactly.
Each Mishnah had its own music, separately.
Each Mishnah had its own music. So therefore, time is its presence role. Maybe sometimes a Tana would say something in a way that would fit the music. And that would explain why you would have Kisuri Makasa or why over here in this case it appears to be repetitious. Because you need to fit the words. Anyway, so the music would define the Mishnah. Because otherwise you'd be messing up the rhythm. So he says, that's the chat. Gemara Gomer's Marut today? What do you think? We're just fitting it into the vaudeville lines here? Is this part of the song? No, this has got to be a Gemara. It's not a Mishnah. It's very cute. There were a few pieces in the Tiferet Yisrael that caused a lot of people to be very upset with him. That was one of them. The other one was his famous story of the handwriting and phrenology check of Moshe Rabbeinu. Which he says over a story that they sent a picture of Moshe Rabbeinu to these experts, these psychological experts in phrenology. He brings this story. He's like so they said, this is the biggest Russian in the world. So they came back and said, that's right. That's the godless of Moshe, that he was born as the biggest Russian in the world and that he worked on himself and he became the biggest guy. That's obviously the stuff that people don't like. This is a Kitovu, like, how is a Kitovu? is malik alabayis kolayra, etc., etc. Also, it's right. And listen, that was another reason. And the third reason was the psak in the Orach HaShulchan that social standards define arayos. In which case, it was matir saying when it's when you're out on the street in which nobody covers their hair anymore, that it wouldn't be an issur to say Kriyat Shema inside of it, because otherwise, I mean, he did certain things that are defined as erva are because they're normally not exposed. But if they are exposed, then it doesn't become an erva. That is also for a certain dinner.
So we can go far as shaking hands?
No. He's not saying that. He's saying in terms of the terms of question, which is like a yur and so on and so forth. It's something matir has a shalom, and he's saying vis-a-vis the halachas that are not a yur, that's not considered to be fine. I mean, it's perfectly reasonable psak. But the Hasidim certainly didn't like that psak. So that cut out yet another, you know. The yeshivalite didn't like the songs of the Mishnah, and the Hasidim didn't like the psak of the Orach HaShulchan, so that knocked out a lot of the audience, you know. you had to be careful even in those days. And then, when his son came up with the book My Uncle the Netziv, and I had to recall it because it mentioned that the Netziv actually read the newspaper, that did it in completely. The whole family was no good. That's the third dream already.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Chaval. Okay, continues the Gemara. Anyway, so Gemara Gomor is Murutta. If there's no reason to say that there was a machloket, then you don't pass in a psak. Tana Rabbana, Hatsat Tzvi, Sumavi Yashem. If you have a Tzvi that is blind or asleep, you're saying, okay, so what am I doing? I'm creeping up on him, he doesn't even know that I'm there. And then I put the net over him, but he was already mitzvah because he wasn't moving. No, you're still tired. Hashenkin, if it was chiger, the zakein, the choleh, if it was, however, lame, so couldn't run away, or it was too old to move, or it was sick, it would be potter. I'm not bad, Rav Yosef, who explains to me the difference, maishnahani, maishnahani. What's the difference between them? Hani abidi l'rabuye, hani lo abidi l'rabuye. I mean, apparently the nafkamin is that the one where he's just asleep, he can suddenly pop up as soon as he senses that somebody's coming, or he feels you're trying to put a net over him, he'll pop up and run away. Mashenke and the others, not. If that's the case, I mean, okay. And that's a good explanation. But there's,
what's that? What is the word?
Rabunye, to, you know, make himself more movable. Rova. He moves around. He gets around. Problem is, how do you explain the fact that the Brisa says, Vatanya Chole Chayav? Here you said Cholez Patur. Here it says Cholez Chayav. What's the difference? Reb Shesha, exactly. That's the difference. Or Kasha. Haba Chole Machmat Ishta. See, that he's sick because he has a virus of some kind. He's running a high fever. So he's lethargic. He's sitting over there. Ugh. Believe me, no matter how lethargic he is, when you try to grab him, he runs. Masha Ein Kane. If he's chole in a way that he's simply he's dehydrated, exhausted, can't move, he can't bestir himself. That would be the word called ribuye. He can't bestir himself to move. He's too sick to move. Basically, that's his sickness. Is that he can't run away? Over there, you'd be potter because he's already needs it. Tana Rabbanan atzat chagavim. Chagavim are edible. Gazin, a type of edible chagav. Or tsirin v'yitushin, or wasps, or mosquitoes on Shabbos. You're still chayav, divrei Rabbi Meir. V'chachachamim omrim, no. Kol shebi mino nitzot chayav. Only those things, like the chagav, yes. The gazin, yes. Who catches wasps? No, the point of you. The most you could say is people might set up a trap to prevent the wasp from getting them. You certainly don't trap wasps in order to have the wasps. So only a mean that's nitzod you would be chayav. But kosha ein b'mino nitzod, if that is not the norm, that there should be a tzeda, then it lacks in the definition of the malacha of tzeda. So that the malacha of tzeda does not consist of keeping something which normally freely moves in a box. That's not what Seda means. Seda means allowing something which has in it a function that is used by humans to be yours. That's a completely different thing, and therefore there is no tzeda on such things. This is a fundamental machlokes Rabbi Meir never for me. Tanya Irach, Hatzat Chagavim B'Sha'at Hatal Patur. It's an interesting braisa that says if you grab Chagavim while it's damp outside, they basically cannot escape. Yeah.
Levi's book has a piece on that. And he says they show that they become blind, actually.
Right, amazing.
In the morning.
So, it's unbelievable. So Rashi says when the dew falls, they go blind.
They've proven that because of the receptors of their eyes have so many facets that
right. If there's any damp on it, they can't see anything.
Blind, yeah, because of the eyes, the structure of their eyes.
So they're mitavrot. They're mitavrot, they can't run away. They're blind, they don't see you coming, and therefore you can catch them. But if it's b'sha'at hashrav, where everything is dry, then you're chayav. Elazar ben Mahavai omer, im hayu mekalchot va'ot patur. If you have swarming locusts, then catching them is patur, because they basically fly into things. They're not escaping, they're not attempting to go anywhere particular, they're just swarming. If they're swarming, you just take up a bag and you close the bag over them. So Mamela, that's called Nitzot. Iboil. Elazar ben Ma'avai, Areshakoy or Asefakoy? Is he saying when they're blind and swarming? That's the point? Or is he saying even when they're not blind, and you'd say you're Chayev, if they're swarming, you'd be Potter? So he might be Mach, but he might be Mekel. Tashma, we have a riot from the Braita. Hatzad Chagavim B'Sha'at HaTal Patur B'Sha'at HaShrav Chayav, says the Braita. Elazar ben Mahavai Omer, Afilu B'Sha'at HaShrav. So obviously he's being makeup. Even B'Sha'at HaShrav, where normally they would be escaping. Imayu Mekalchot Uva'ot Patur. If they're swarming, you're Patur. There was a great shot of these ties in the Negev. When we recently, this year, there was the swarming locusts in the Negev. And it was amazing to watch. They just held open these bags, these big, gigantic, garbage bags. Just held them open, pulled them up, and closed them. They would catch hundreds of these locusts. Then they were a real treat. They would eat them. So, it's a great lunch. the things that you use on top of the bag when it's filled. Those little metal pieces. Is it called tie? How about if it walks into the house all on its own? And then you close the door. You close the door. Na'al obviously doesn't mean walk. But we use it. Milat HaDelet simply means closing a door in the Gemara. You're chayav. But if two people swing the door closed, then you're potter, because this is a standard. Echad shasur chayav, shnayim shasur pturim. How about if lo yochol echad linol v'nolo shnayim? If the door consists of two pieces, or you need both of you to close it at one time, or it's a very heavy door. And then two closing would be chayev. That's according to the sheet that we saw before. Zeino yochol, zeino yochol. Whereas Rabbi Shimon potters even zeino yochol, like he learned from the pasuk earlier. Omer Rabbi Yirmiyahu bar Abba Amar Shmuel, Hatzad Ari b'Shabbat. I mean, forget about the fact that Tzvi is in the house. You could even have the Ari in a net. He ain't trapped. So you would not be chayev until you get him in his cage. Don't take anything for granted. So eino chayav achiach niseno legurziki shavu. You got to get him in that little cage where he can't escape. But at this point he's just playing along, waiting for the right minute. I will leave the Mishnah for tomorrow.
What I meant to say about Levi, he's especially
the cholam mekalkulim piturim. Tani Rabbi Avu kamed Rabbi Yochanan cholam mekalkulim piturim chutz mechovelu ma'avir. I'm like, hok tani lebra chovelu ma'avir in a Mishnah. V'im timzom a Mishnah, it's got to be that it's tzorech. So chovel b'tzorech lekalbo ma'avir b'tzorech le'efra. In which case it's not mekalkul. What was Rabbi Abu thinking? A non-tzan kolam kafel and b'turin, period. That's not a problem. That's Rabbi Yehuda. Right, Rabbi Shimon. My time, the Rabbi Shimon. Yitzrich called him Yishrim Mila. Mashma that a chov will be al mischayev. Then Yosrach mana havora gabi bat kohen. So in other words, Mavir would be chayev. Rabbi Yehuda. Hata mitakenu kiravashi dam ravashi. Malay taken mila. Malay taken kli. Malay lavasho ptila. Malay lavasho samanim. Shiur hamalabi. Rabbi Yosef machve kaful. Rabbi Baraga. Barami machve pashut. Twice. So each one was, weren't chaylek. They were just being machve differently. Rabbi Yudomer had sat tzipor lemigdal v'tzvila bayit chayav. Rachamim omrim, tzipor lemigdal, that's true. But tzvi could be lebayit, l'gina, l'chatser, l'bivarium. Reb Shimon ben Gamliel omer, lo kol l'bivarium shavim. Zakla, mechusar tzeda patur, sheino mechusar tzeda chayav. Sanatam ein tzadim dagim min abivarium yontov, ve'en notim v'tehem mizonot. Aval tzadim chaya v'of, and odim b'zim mizonot. On the other hand, v'aminu, bivarion shel chayot v'shel ofot v'shel dagim, ein tzadim meyem b'yom tov, ein odim b'zim mizonot, kasher chaya chaya, kasher ofot ha'ofot. So b'shleim chaya chaya, alone, I wouldn't have seen it as a problem. It's already a rabbanon. El ofot ha'ofot, anyway, we're going to have to figure out a solution. Kasher. B'chitim ofot ha'ofot, naim elo kasher. Bayit is mikora, and nonetheless, bein l'reviyut, bein l'rabbanon, tzipor l'migdolin, the bayit lo. Omer Rabba Baravuna, achap et tzipor dror askir. If you sheinam bekabelet marut, the tonet veri nishmo, lama nikra shmo, tzipor dror, v'nei shedara, the bayit kebasadeh. So if that's the case, let's go back now to Chaya Chaya. We could vary the case like we did for the tzipor. Ha be biver gadol, ha be biver katan. Echidami biver gadol, echidami biver katan. Omer Vashi kol eichad the roi batri umati libachad shichaya is called a biver katan. Anything else is called a biver gadol. Inami kol eichad the nafatula diktolam hadad is called a biver katan. Anything else is a biver gadol. Inami is biver. Kolayka the lekka uksi uksi biver katan biver biver ah biver gadol. Yes, I think that's that guy collecting money. Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, Amen. Om Reb Yosef, Om Reb Yudah Mishmuel, Allah Reb Shimon ben Gamliel. Om Leya, but what do you mean Halacha? Halacha be called the plige. Om Leya, my nakelach amina. Om Leya, Gemara Gomez Muro today. Tana Rabbanan, Hatzat Svi Suma Liyashem Chayav. Chiger zokin v'chole patur. I'm going to buy them. Yosef, my shani. Because hani avil rubli, hani lo avil rubli. I bought hani chole chayav. On Reb Shimon shlo kasha. O v'chole machmat ishta. O v'chole machmat uvtsina. Ton rabban an atzat chadavim ergazim. Or even sirin v'yetushim v'shabat. Chayav. Tivre v'meir. Rechachamim omrim. Kol shebimino nitzot chayav. Kol shebimino nitzot patur. Tani Ilak, Atsat Chagavim, Bishat Atal, Patur, Bishat Ashrav, Chayav, Elazar ben Mahava, Yomir, Imayu, Mekalchot, Uvaot, Patur, Iboilu, Elazar ben Mahava, Reshiko, Yasefakoi, Tashma, Atsat Chagavim, Bishat Atal, Patur, Bishat Ashrav, Chayav, Elazar ben Mahava, Yomir, Atfilo, Bishat Ashrav, Imayu, Mekalchot, Uvaot, Patur, Si, Shemichnas, Lebayit, Benahalach, Abafanam, Chayav, Nalo shnayim p'turim lo yochol echad l'novin minolo shnayim chayav Reb Shimon p'ter on Reb Yimei Bar Abba on Shmuel. But when it comes to an Ari, atzar Ari b'Shabbat ino chayav ad sheyakniseno l'gurzaki shemo. I like that word, gurzaki.